Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Mark your calendars for Fetch Long Beach happening this December 6th through the 8th. Join us for 3 days of top-tier veterinarian continuing education, all while soaking in the California sunshine. At Fetch Long Beach, our attendees come first. That's why we offer personalized learning opportunities, complimentary meals, and a dedicated staff ready to support you every step of the way. So if you are looking for that perfect year-end CE opportunity, Fetch Long Beach is the place to be.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. We have the 2024 Veterinary Hero Award in Dermatology. Dr. Megan Saltz in the house. How are you, my friend?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on your win this year.
Oh, shocking and very, very happy to be able to share it with everybody. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, to the listeners out there, we're going to be chatting in dermatology, red flags, and allergy mimickers. I wonder what we're going to chat about. A little bit of information about our wonderful friend here, Megan. She grew up on a hobby farm in Brockville, Ontario, Canada, where her love for animals flourished. And in addition to her farm chores, she began working at the local Brockville Animal Hospital at the age of 13. I love hearing this. I loved every moment of it. Megan later moved to Prince Edward Island, Canada, where she ultimately achieved her dream of becoming a veterinarian, receiving her doctorate of DVM in 2012 from the Atlantic Veterinary College. And after graduation, Megan relocated to Toronto, Ontario to complete a rotating internship, followed by a specialty dermatology internship. And her passion for dermatology deepened, and she was fortunate to be accepted to the residency with dermatology for animals. In 2018, she became a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Dermatology. And she's continued with her work for Derm for Animals in Akron, Ohio. Is it Akron?
Akron.
Akron, Ohio. And yeah. Recently moved to the Catonsville, Maryland location.
Catonsville. Yeah. They're all weird names.
That's okay. It's all good. We want to give them the special shout out they deserve.
Yeah.
She's trained two dermatology specialty technicians and continues to work with residents through the ACVD. And she currently resides in Baltimore with her wife, Katie, and their fur kids, Bruce, Iris, and Max. When she's not promoting the field of veterinary derm, you can find Megan traveling, hiking, rowing, and exploring new foodie spots. Yes. Wait, what kind of fur babies do you have?
Oh, don't judge me. So I have a three-legged chihuahua who's 14, oh. Bruce. And then Iris, who's a microophthalmia case and allergy case, and she's from Akron. She was a foster cat. And then Max is also from Akron, from our dermatology office there. He has allergies. He's a Frenchie, though, so don't hold it against me.
No, we don't hold nothing against anyone about this.
They're great, though.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so let's talk about this. So let's just, everyone picture it. A dog enters the clinic for an evaluation of a skin condition other than allergies. So what could this patient have? So what are some things that we need to talk about with those things?
Yeah, really, we want to have a bunch of differential diagnoses on our radar because everything can really look the same. And so when we have a dog coming in that are crusty, that have infections, you know, depending on their patterns of lesions, you may have things from allergy to T-cell lymphoma on your list. So there's a wide range of different diseases to consider. So generally, rule of thumb, you know, things that we learn in vet school and in my internship and residency, we're going to be ruling out things that can cause folliculitis, like dermatophytosis, Demodex, pyoderma. But then we're looking at weirder things like sebaceous adenitis, pemphigus foliaceus. So there's a lot of different things that look essentially the same until you start digging a little bit deeper.
Digging a little bit deeper. See what you did there? A little metaphor for derm.
Yeah.
I like that. So what are some key clinical features, or let's call them red flags, that would make us want to investigate other differentials? Specifically, we just talked about some of the autoimmune ones like pemphigus and lupus.
Yeah, so I think the systemic sort of aspect of the patient, how the patient's feeling, other vitals, temperature, lethargy, all of the things that we look at our general patient when they come in and say, how are they feeling, is really something to pick up on. Because with some of these autoimmune diseases, especially some of our cases of pemphigus, they can feel pretty crummy when they are presenting to us. So they can have pyrexia, and their temperature can be quite elevated in some of these cases, and just not want to get up or not want to walk at all. They can still be itchy, but that may not be the main symptom that we're seeing. We can also see lab work changes. So historically, if they've seen somebody already, been to an ER or to the general practitioner, lab work changes are pretty common. And so even though we're talking about a skin issue, it can have a lot of effect on different systems in the body. So pyrexia, malaise, CBC changes, or other changes on lab work are going to be just general markers to watch for as we get sort of that sort of differential diagnosis list sort of whittled down a little bit.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit more about that too, because once you identify these clinical signs in general practice world, what are the next steps? Are there specific tools that you would recommend to those listeners tuning in about, what we can do to confirm a diagnosis?
Yeah, so the baseline tests are always something we're going to recommend at our appointments as dermatologists and specialists, at your general practitioner appointments. When we're not sure what's going on, these key diagnostic tests are going to be helpful. So cytology, we want to cytology everything. So typically getting out slides and samples that you can take and look at in the clinic is going to be helpful. So we're really looking for secondary infections or other atypical cells that on those cytology samples we can start to, again, focus on certain differentials. And then skin scrapings and cytology are going to be our bread and butter of all of our derm cases initially when to work up. We don't do a lot of skin scrapings as much anymore, but we do have a lot of great isoxazoline and parasite preventions on the market. But there are times where we forget to give that medication or something's not working as well. So we'll still recommend skin scrapings in a lot of our cases just to get that basic sort of cytology skin scrapings out of the way to make sure we can move forward from there.
Yeah, really helpful. Why do you think, are we doing less skin scrapings because we trust the isoxazoline so much? Is that what it is?
Yeah. So, and I think I'm a little bit more skeptical. I'm doing more skin scrapings nowadays just
Yeah.
because we are seeing failures, and that may be because, again, we forgot to give a medication, or they took them off that medication pet parent for a couple of months because they thought that that was contributing to skin lesions. But we do see a lot of resistance to medications in the parasite world, in the antibiotic world. So I think just still getting your basic diagnostic tests underway are really important, because again, they could have had an exposure to scabies, where historically we haven't been dealing with that, and that's something new that may be causing a lot of the symptoms that we're seeing with the patient.
Right. Okay. So if we're concerned about some autoimmune diseases, how would we treat some of them, and what are some key goals that we're trying to aim for?
Yeah, so I think for autoimmune diseases, we definitely want the diagnosis first, because if we're suspicious, I think that bodes, that's a big piece of information. We can look at a couple of the clues or red flags that make sense in treating that disease. But if we are dealing with an autoimmune disease, a diagnosis is really helpful, because that's going to tell us that we have to be a little bit more aggressive with our treatments. And a lot of these diseases need immunosuppressive medications, which again comes with more side effects, comes with more monitoring. So getting that diagnosis to make sure we know what we're treating is going to be helpful. So diagnosis of autoimmune diseases may require a biopsy first. So we'll typically want to get samples, making sure that we can get that diagnosis before we head into treatments. For treatments, there's a lot of different types of treatments for autoimmune diseases. So depending on the type of the autoimmune disease, there may be some treatments that we have suspicion that they'll do better than others. Or if we have a patient with other comorbidities or other historical symptoms, like they have allergy and an autoimmune disease, then we may choose those medications depending on the patient. So there's a lot of different types of medications, steroids. You know, a lot of people know about steroids, and those are our go-tos. But when we talk about steroids, we typically say, well, we don't want to be on those long term. So do we have any other options? Typically, for a lot of our autoimmune diseases, they will require steroids for initial treatment, or what I call putting out the fire, getting things calmed down. But then long term, if we can look at transitioning that patient to something else, that's ideally what our goal is for treatment.
What are some of those things that you transition them over to long-term wise?
Yeah, so cyclosporine is something that we'll use. We'll typically look at using atopica or generic cyclosporins. There's lots of different ways that you can administer that, liquid or capsules. We will use other therapies like mycophenolate, azathioprine. There's going to be things that, you know, we might need to really up our ante and use bigger gun medications. So depending on the case or depending on how serious it is, we might decide to go pretty heavy initially with steroids, azathioprine. And, you know, sometimes we need more than one medication. So two medications are pretty common to be used as a transition and long term, eventually still the goal of getting off of steroids. But there are a lot of patients, especially with the population that, you know, we see as dermatologists, the worst of the worst usually. You know, we can be talking about two or three combinations of medications. So we can use cyclosporine, we can use steroids and azathioprine in some of our more serious conditions.
And what about supplements too? Because I know like omega-3 or 6 fatty acids. What are your thoughts on that for these patients?
Yeah, generally, I think they're always helpful. They can, like, as you know, with oral medications, anything can cause an upset stomach. So, initially, when we're first starting treatments for some of these diseases like SLO or discoid lupus or pemphigus, we're not generally going to focus on the gentle supplements initially because we're really trying to get control of the disease. We're trying to get that patient feeling better. And then moving forward, if we are able to add in gentle therapies, you know, SLO cases or symmetrical loopoid onychodystrophy cases, we can use things like biotin or vitamin E or fatty acids. But when things are more active, that's not going to give you that biggest bang for your buck right away. It's going to be something that we'll rely on more for future treatment.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Helpful there. And I think one of the hardest things, this is my opinion about this, but I do find it a little bit of a challenge communicating this to pet owners about these types of diseases. You know, with flea allergy, dermatitis, even food allergy or atopic dermatitis, it's a little bit of an easier communication. What are some pieces of advice you can give to those tuning in about like how we effectively communicate this to our clients?
I think that is probably the most difficult part of any practice is just communication. And so whether you're talking about allergy or flea allergy, like you said, you really need to get back to the basics and not have any assumptions and talk about it like you were talking to somebody that had no background in this whatsoever, which some people will have background or if they've done the research, but we want to be able to answer things and not assume that they know things about this disease. So one thing with autoimmune disease is that they may need to be on treatment long term or lifelong. So getting that out of the way and saying, you know, we want your patient, your pet to feel better, you know, that we're going to focus on some comfort, but we want to be able to tell you that lifelong, this might be a long-term treatment. So expectation-wise, even if we get your pet feeling better now, we know that long-term, we still need a maintenance plan. So that long-term expectation can be a bit of a void sometimes where we don't talk about those future things, but giving them a plan from your put out the fire plan to the maintenance plan, just giving that the pet parent some insight to that is probably the biggest thing that we want to say out loud and not assume that they know. So the long-term plan is really important. And then also if we're talking about, you know, consideration of cost or long-term side effects, you know, preparing them for what is to come with the use of those medications, the disease. So do we need to monitor lab work more frequently? Do those medications have an impact on their liver? How is this going to affect their quality of life long-term? Is this a fatal disease or is it something that we can live with? You know, saying and answering those things, trying to think about the questions we would want to ask if we were getting a new diagnosis as a human, an individual in medical industry. You know, can we assume that nobody knows anything yet, and trying to answer those questions up front without them having to search for those questions? Those are going to be the base things that you want to make sure you have at your fingertips when you start talking. Again, most people won't remember most of this stuff. Yeah. So also, you know, giving them resources to help them through that process.
Yeah, I like that you shared too, like setting those expectations, knowing that this isn't just a one and done kind of a treatment. This is a long-term, you know, rechecks and communication among maybe the three of us, the GP, dermatologist, and the client. So I think it's really good to have that expectation. I found too in my experience that some owners always feel guilty. They feel like they did something wrong when they get this diagnosis. Have you heard of that too? Do they feel like, what did I do? Is it, did I do something wrong?
Yeah. There's always a search for understanding and, you know, what happened or why did this happen? And that's probably the hardest thing, because a lot of these diseases are idiopathic and we just don't have a reason why this is happening. And even from an allergy standpoint, we're searching for those little fixes or those answers to help us understand. So it's not the detergent. It's not because you moved or the stress, you know, that caused all of this. And in saying it out loud, you know, you did everything well. Like, this is not something that you caused, to know that you can, you know, get them to feel a little bit more at ease and not blaming themselves for this. And there is a lot of questions that come up with pet parents when this happens. And that certainly is a big one that we have to tackle.
Yeah. I equate it to similar things, like, you know, with a heart murmur that we detect, or, you know, mm-hmm. certain other things that we just find on physical exam. This is just part of, you know, the way of life, you know, with genetics and some of these conditions that these dogs and cats can develop. So, but it's nothing, like, to this point, not impossible, certainly manageable, and just making sure we get to that right diagnosis of it. So it's fantastic. You know, I got to tell you, Megan, we haven't covered this topic ever on the podcast before. And I think it's a really good one, because I was in my mind, for some reason, you might laugh, I always feel like this is like the zebra to dermatology. You know, it's like the Addisons to endocrinology when you're mm-hmm. looking at something and I'm like, is it lupus? Is it some sort of autoimmune going on?
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can do weird things. So yeah. Not everything looks the same. If it is a discoid lupus or a pemphigus, they all may have different characteristics, but going back to your basics and saying systemically, what is this pet telling me? The pattern of lesions can be helpful. Doing your baseline tests, so that's going to be helpful. But a biopsy is really going to be, you know, helping narrow those things down. Still, even the biopsies aren't 100%. As you know, they're just, you know, there's patterns that we're looking for with these things. So if we can start recognizing the patterns, what the lesions look like, what the patient's telling us, those are going to be helpful in narrowing that down.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you so much. This has been so good. Thank you for sharing your expertise
Thank
with us, Dr. Saltz. Excellent. And where are you located, by the way? Where are you at?
Yeah. We're just outside of Baltimore City proper in Baltimore County, in Catonsville. So Catonsville is just on the Beltway, and we're here seeing patients. We're busy and here to help.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And can't wait to congratulate you in person soon for your award. So
thank
awesome
you.
Job.
Thank
yeah.
you so much.
You're welcome. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast, as we always continue to grow here on the Vet Blast podcast. And we'll see you next week, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take care. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.